Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Gregory Melville and Susan Fox and Kathleen Bromage.
From Connecticut Public Radio in Hartford, this is Audacious. I'm Kyone Wolf, and that is a mashup of Beyoncé and Taylor Swift, which is the perfect start to a show featuring two of their biggest fans. Maverick Flood has been to so many Beyoncé concerts that she, no joke, regularly recognizes him. Seriously, we'll have a link to a video of it for you. And Molly Swindle has been one of the OG Swifties since 2006. Her merch collection will make your jaw drop. But I've got a confession. In the past couple years, I haven't really been listening to a lot of music because so many of the songs are about love, like "You're all mine and everything's amazing and I'm so happy," or "I can't live if living is without you," or even "I'm mad at you for breaking my heart." And I frankly am not relating to any of that lately. So for the last couple of years, I've been more of a public radio audiobook podcast type of person. But today, I'm letting go and allowing this music to wash over me. And who better to be our guides than these Beyoncé and Taylor Swift superfans? Molly Swindle is a flight attendant from Georgia, and she's seen Taylor 23 times. Here's how it all began.
She played Tim McGraw, and of course, the first lyric of the song mentions Georgia, and we are from Georgia. So we're like, this is so cool. We thought it was like a song like written for us, and we just kept listening to it over and over.
He said the way my blue eyes shined, put those Georgia stars to shame that night. I said that's a lie.
And then she was an opener for a couple different huge musical acts that were country artists, and one of them was coming to Atlanta. And so we ended up going to when she opened for Brad Paisley, and we went to the show, and at the end of her set, she goes, "Also, if you want to meet me, you can like come to this area after the show." So I immediately was like, I'm going to meet her. I was there with my best friend, who's still one of my best friends to this day, who's also a redhead. So 15 always connected to me later as well, because her best friend is a redhead named Abigail.
You sit in class next to a redhead named Abigail, and soon enough, you're best friends.
And I was like, oh my gosh, we have to meet her. And so I was with another older sister who actually drove us all there because we couldn't drive yet. And I was like, I want to go meet her. And she's like, I'm not going with you. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going. She's like, you can't go by yourself. Like, you are children and you're not going to go like walk over there. So I called my dad and was like, I have to meet her. And I think my parents knew that whenever I was very passionate about something, I never shut up about it. It's been like that my whole life. I've always been very intensely into whatever I'm passionate about. And I think they were like, if we don't let her do this, we will never hear the end of this. So they talked to my oldest sister and they're like, Mackenzie, you have to go wait in line with Molly and Heidi. They can't go by themselves. And that sister actually didn't like country music. She was just there because her friends were there. She was all annoyed and she walked over and we waited in the line and we were the second group in line and it started drizzling. And we were just, I think we waited like 2 hours, 2.5 hours. We were afraid she wasn't going to come out because of the rain. Little did we know at that point that Taylor loves rain, and the rain shows would end up becoming an iconic thing for Taylor as well. And we just sat in the rain waiting, and then it kind of calm down. And of course, our hair, because it's like southern humidity, was like all poopy. We're like, we're going to meet her and we're going to look horrible. So we quickly like braided our hair and like tried to make herself look better. And then she came out and she was the sweetest person. And she was incredible to me. She was incredible to my friend. She was incredible to my sister. My sister's friend was grounded and she was on the phone with her friend. And then Taylor took the phone and started talking to her friend who was grounded. My sister was not into country music, had never heard Taylor before this interaction, and had like, she's like, I don't have anything for her to sign. So she took off her like sweaty Batman sock or Superman sock and Taylor signed it. And she's still like that with her fans today, which is why people connect with her. And so we walked away from that and we're like, wow, she's the best. And from that point forward, I was like full-fledged, like, Taylor's the best. I'm a Swiftie. And I went to school and I talked about it. But at that time, and you know, she was still rising. So not a lot of people shared my same enthusiasm for Taylor that I did.
I want to take something you said and hold on to it and dig my teeth into it a little bit with you. You were talking about how she's a little bit older than you. And so it just seems like she would write a song or something would come out and it would speak to you or inform you or help guide you through what you were going through, almost in this, like, dare I say, spiritual or even psychic way. Like, how could this one person so perfectly put this feeling that you would later experience? I wonder if underneath all of that, and I know you're only speaking for you, but I also find it fascinating that your feelings are also so often shared by many other Swifties, almost as the nature of it, you feel this spiritual connection with her, almost like it's otherworldly. Is that right? Am I off?
There is definitely a connection that I think she's incredibly talented with what she does. And so many artists, I feel like, just try to write hits. And I feel like she writes real experiences. And because she's writing true experiences, she's also the songwriter. A lot of artists also sing other people's songs that they didn't write. So they don't have that same connection and that depth and that soul that goes into the song. So she's putting out a very soulful piece of music for every single piece that she's doing. And like, she's very thoughtful for what she puts out and she wants it to tell stories. She wants people to connect with it. And she's understanding and grasping of that. She's very self-aware. She's always thinking about the fan and like the actual music itself. Whereas others are like, okay, you want to give me that music? I don't actually know what this is about, but you wrote it for me and it's going to be a pop hit and I'm going to sing in it. And she doesn't do that. So I feel like, even though there are elements of her that are very commercialized, I feel like her music itself doesn't feel very commercialized. And I think that's why people connect to it so deeply as well. Her music just connects across so many people because you can create your own experience with it. And she talks about that on tour too. She goes, by the end of the night, you're going to have like your own experiences with these songs. And I want you to take away your own experience. This might've been mine when I wrote it, but this is now yours. And how I listen to all the songs is my experience. And she has been able to write that so beautifully.
One thing that I know for sure about Taylor Swift is that the Swifties are a force, literally and figuratively. And I'd like to hear your reflections on what the relationship is like with the other people who love her so much. What does that mean to you? What does that do for you?
It's such a special relationship with Swifties and everybody's so kind and we really do stick together and we care about like what other people are going through and what's happening. And I've flown to see them. They've flown to see me. I have stayed in their house. They've stayed in mine. Like we've gone to shows together, tours. Like Swifties are really a special group of people. And I think like Taylor has given us all these connections and all these people, but it's so interesting because so much of being a Swiftie too, it's like, yes, she's a very central part of it, but there's so much more to being a Swiftie than just Taylor. If that, I don't know if that makes sense, but like all the connections and the interactions and the inside jokes we have as a fandom, that's just like a very special, unique experience.
When you're at a Taylor Swift concert and it hasn't started yet and you're feeling really excited and then the lights go down, what is going through your mind and heart and soul at that moment?
I honestly can't tell you what thought is going in through my mind because like looking back on it, like I don't know, actually. I just feel like you're so excited and you're so, and I mean, it is an electric vibe in that stadium. Like it, you can feel it. It is such an energy that you will never be able to have somewhere else. I mean, if there's some news articles about like seismic activity from Swifties like in the stadium. And I mean, it is so infectious. It's such a high, like some people do drugs. I go to Taylor Swift concerts, you know, it's therapeutic. It's not hurting anybody. Better for my wallet long term.
After effects are fantastic.
Yeah.
Although actually, do you ever get like a post Taylor Swift show low?
Because it is such a community and because you create these connections with people when you are leaving and this tour ends, like it's not just her music that's ending. It's also getting with a bunch of people who have the exact same loves and passions that you do and are just as enthusiastic as you are. And we are all there for the same reason. We are all love her music. We all deeply connect to her music. She connects across cultures too, which I think is so special that we live very different lifestyles and we were still able to connect and have such an incredible time just because we all support the same artist.
We have to talk about merch.
Yes. So I do have a very extensive, large collection. I look at it as an investment at this point in my life. I don't intend to sell it. I enjoy having it. But I know that like if push came to shove, like, and I really needed it and like if it hit the fan, like I would literally have something that I could sell and definitely have a lot of money come in, but that's not my intent. I don't resell.
What are some of those items that are worth the most?
My vinyl collection's worth a lot of money and I have a lot of the more rare pieces of it. Because I have like a vinyl that I can spin and a vinyl that I'll keep stowed. I have an orange Reputation vinyl and mine is like still has the original price tags and everything on it. And some of my autographs, a lot of my vinyl, the cardigans are worth a decent amount of money. I'd say now that I've completed her ornament collection, which is 84 official ornaments, I'd say that would probably be pretty valuable. There's just like a lot of random pieces here and there, a lot of her jewelry pieces. Some of the more like the original shirts that came from her first era, I would say are fairly valuable. I sold 2 extra Record Store Day vinyl that I had because this was when I was still in school. My mom was like, you just have a lot of merch, Molly, and you're not using those. Like, I really think you should sell it. And so I sold it 2 of the vinyl for, I think it was like $50 each. And now each of those goes for like $700 or $800. So I was like, I'm never selling again. I only trade. And the thing is, it's not that I would have sold them for money anyway, like later, but it's, I could trade them for something maybe I'm missing that I would want to have.
If your house were burning down and you could only snag 3 items, what are the 3 that come to mind and why?
So I have a little bit of a cheat because I have some of my stuff all like in a
go bag?
Yeah, like one of those bags that you like put under a bed. So I'd probably grab that. And I for sure grab the autograph she signed for me when I met her. Probably would save the 8x10 before I would save the shirt. And then I would grab one of the vinyl boxes. The one that has like the Record Store Days and the like Reputation vinyl in it. That's the FYE vinyl.
How much do you estimate you have spent on Taylor Swift tickets, merch, whatever?
I feel like people are going to get so offended, but I have definitely spent what would be some people's yearly salaries easily.
Over a long period of time.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say maybe this year alone, but yeah, over a long period of time.
That was Molly Swindle, one of the biggest Taylor Swift fans on planet Earth. We're going out with Is It Over Now, a song Molly specifically requested we play. When we get back, Molly's reaction to Taylor being named Time's Person of the Year for 2023.
I'm surprised it didn't happen earlier, actually. And I think it goes so into what even her song The Man talks about. Like, if she had been a man, I think she would have had that title 5-6 years ago.
Then what's it like when your favorite artist of all time serenades you personally for your birthday?
She like reaches for my hand and she's like, happy birthday, and just literally singing, looking in my eyes, and I'm like
uh-huh. I'm Kyone Wolf. This is Audacious. Stay with me. Just to see you come running, running.
say the one thing I've been wanting, but no.
Support for this podcast comes from Hartford HealthCare.
Elevating Health is funded by Hartford HealthCare. Loneliness can be a significant health risk to people of all ages. Dr. Laura Saunders, a psychologist from Hartford HealthCare's Institute of Living, talks about social isolation and why we need to connect in person.
Loneliness actually is a pretty significant health risk for people that struggle with social isolation. It affects their blood pressure, it affects their immune system, it affects your willingness to get up and get out, and can cause some not just emotional issues, but health problems as well.
You're not alone. Dr. Saunders explains how important it is for us to look to others and get out of our comfort zone.
I like to talk about social isolation as not just that individual's problem, but it's a community problem or it's a family problem. We need to connect with others. We can take space at times as well, but we need to step out of our comfort zone and do things to connect with other people. It's life-saving.
For more information, go to ctpublic.org/elevatinghealth.
It's me. Hi, this is Audacious. I'm Kyone Wolf, and even I know that's Taylor Swift. The 34-year-old singer-songwriter slash a thousand other things is everywhere. Her Eras Tour is the first music event to surpass $1 billion in revenue, and the Eras Tour movie is the best-selling concert film of all time. She's won 14 Grammys, 40 American Music Awards, 39 Billboard Music Awards, 118 Guinness World Records, and for good measure, one Emmy. And in late 2023, Taylor officially became the first billionaire in the world with music as the main source of income. I could fill a whole hour with facts and figures about this powerhouse, but then you wouldn't get to hear from Maverick Flood, Beyoncé's biggest fan, or from Molly Swindle, who's one of the most devoted Swifties you'll find anywhere. Let's get back to our conversation with Molly. Do you have any tattoos?
I don't have any Taylor tattoos, no.
If you had to get a tattoo to save Taylor's life, what tattoo would you get?
There is one tattoo of hers that I want, but I have to meet her to be able to get it. And that is the song Delicate is very heavily connected to my dad's passing, just like a lot with my life, like afterwards, and like me grieving with it, and like before he passed, like all this stuff.
Is it cool that I said all that? Is it too soon to do this yet? Cause I know that it's delicate. Isn't it?
And I want more than anything if I were to meet her. And that's why I was like, if I get invited, like some, I know a lot of people were invited, like the Eras Tour movie premiere. Like I always carry around like a Reputation for her to sign. And then I want her to write some of the lyrics to Delicate. And I would get some of the lyrics tattooed on me if it's in her handwriting. I would have to be like, she personally wrote it for me, knowing the intention behind it.
All that is it chill that you're in my head, cause I know that it's delicate.
One thing I've been thinking about a lot recently is how when we see people we look up to, like maybe it's their talent we look up to, maybe it's their generosity or their sense of humor, I think about how we are drawn to that aspect of them because in some way deep down we see it in ourselves too, or the potential for it. Like, she has the kind of charisma that I think I have too. I just haven't gotten there yet. Or she has the business sense that, God, I really respect. When I get into a position of power, I hope I run it. I hope I run my business like she does. So that being said, when you find yourself steeped in all the greatness that Taylor makes you feel, what is it in you that you think you see in her?
Well, I know it's not singing. I cannot sing at all. I don't know. I do feel like when you watch, she's wildly funny. And I feel like, I'd like to say, like, we connect in that sense of, like, I'll look back at, like, some of the things she used to say and do. And I feel like it's very similar to, like, my sense of humor. And I think it's hysterical. I do also absolutely appreciate her business acumen. I mean, it is insane. And that comes from her father as well. I mean, her father is incredible. I mean, the whole family actually is incredibly talented. And he, I think, taught her a lot of the skills. And I'm sure her mother did as well. Her mom was marketing. So they both gave her the skills, I think, that created who she is today in terms of, like, her business skill. And she's been able to, like, take what two greats have taught her and just has created an absolutely insane empire. And she's always been very thoughtful in everything she's done. So I will say, like, the business acumen I've always respected. I've also respected the time she's put into everything. You can see it going back to the Fearless tour. And I think that's something that I'm always very passionate about what I do. I always want to make sure that I'm giving the best. Like, if I'm working for you and you're paying me for something, I'm going to make sure that I'm putting my best foot forward for you, for, like, doing the best I absolutely can. And then as well as, like, just a love of what you're doing and what you're putting out, from every costume and detail to what the dancers are doing to that light shining at that time and everything. She storyboards, she puts all that out there. And I think that she has such an intense hand in everything she does.
Taylor was recently named Time Person of the Year 2023. I imagine you're not surprised. How did you react to that news?
I'm surprised it didn't happen earlier, actually. That is my biggest thing. And I think it goes so into what even her song The Man talks about. Like, if she had been a man, I think she would have had that title 5-6 years ago.
I'd be a fearless leader. I'd be an alpha type. When everyone believes ya, what's that like? I'm so sick of running as fast as I can, wondering if I'd get there quicker if I was a man. And I'm so sick of them coming at me again, 'cause if I was a man, then I'd be the man. I'd be the man.
But I am incredibly proud that she does finally have it. She is deserving of it. You cannot. I've been, as you know, part of this fandom since day one, and you have never seen Taylor on the scale that we have seen, are seeing Taylor right now. Like, even when she was at, like, her other, like, height of fame, which I would say would be, like, 1989 era, she's never been this out there and there. But she's always had such a powerful influence in, like, every field she's touched. But yeah, she is everywhere. So, I mean, I think they did it because they knew, like, oh, this is what they have to, but they should have done it years ago. I'm incredibly proud. I think it's awesome. I think the article was incredible. She deserved it. I loved everything about it. I just wish that she had had it more than once. But you know what? I should just be grateful for what we have. So I was very proud that she got it. And it's incredible.
If you imagine your whole life with this same or maybe even increasing intensity of involvement as a Swiftie, like identification as a Swiftie, how do you feel about that life?
I'd be proud of it, honestly. I think I've always been proud of staying by her no matter what, like staying by her when it was unpopular, staying by her when she's wildly popular, and being like, I've always been there. And I think, like, of course, we've had a lot of new fans join. So I think as long as you stayed by her no matter what was happening since you've been a fan, I think it's something to be proud of. And I am proud that I stayed, like, no matter whether it was popular or not. And I will continue unless she does something insane. And I know that, like, if I ever end up having kids, I hope that they love Taylor, like, as much as I do. Right now, I'm not ready to have kids, but, like, I joke, like, the only reason I want kids is to, like, make little Swifties. And I hope like my husband's going to be super into it. Honestly, I probably wouldn't marry him if he was not like passionate about it too, or at least like fueled my crazy a little bit, you know? Definitely if I get married, like some of her songs being involved and like the process, I see it being involved if I have children in their lives. And it'll be like long live, or she's like, point to the picture, please tell my name. Like she will definitely be a part of my kids' lives. Like I've always been like, would I use like Taylor themed baby names? I don't know.
I mean, Taylor could go to any gender.
I don't think I would use her name, but I would maybe like some of the names from like August. I do really love that name, but now it's becoming popular, so I don't want a popular name. But I can see us lost in the memory. August slipped away into a moment in time, cause it was never mine. And I can see us twisted in bed sheets. August slipped away like a bottle of wine, cause you were never mine.
Well, Molly Swindle, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
It is now time we bow our heads and turn towards Beyoncé. Now, I feel as though transparency is always important between me and you, which is why you should know that I am Team Beyoncé. No shade to Swifties. Please don't hurt me. Beyoncé, she makes me feel awe, magic, and a kind of humility. Her music has a deep history of giving me goosebumps of all kinds. Now, Maverick Flood has followed Beyoncé's magic all around the world, having seen her in concert 50 times. We recorded this conversation at the end of January, 2 months before her latest release, Cowboy Carter. I asked Maverick to tell me about his earliest memories of Queen Bee.
It was 2011, and she was performing in Glastonbury, but then it was aired on the BET Awards, and they literally aired like two of her songs. It was like Best Thing I Never Had and End of Time. And the End of Time choreography was just like, okay, I have to learn that. So after that, like, you just go on YouTube, a loophole just begins, and you're like, whoa, she's actually amazing. And then from there on, it's like the next year, I was like, oh, I'm going to see her in concert. And then after that, here we are.
At this point, flashing forward, you've seen Beyoncé in concert 50 times.
Yes.
Can you tell me about the first one?
The first one, I was 16, 17. That was right after she gave birth to Blue, and she was having like her comeback concert. It was 2 hours away from me in Atlantic City, New Jersey. It was the opening back then, which was called Revel. And I was like, I have to go. I don't know how I'm going to go. I was still in high school. The concert tickets were pretty pricey for back then. So my mom and my sister went half on them. And the Beehive was so welcoming, like treated me like I was a little kid. And this is your first concert and you're gonna love it. And she opened the show with my favorite song, which was End of Time. And fell in love. I was like, she's everything. And I thought she would be and more live.
What of all the 50 concerts that you've been to has been your most memorable?
My birthday show in 2016, that was Formation Tour. It was in Boston, Massachusetts. And I knew a couple of the dancers and everything. I don't know whether they told her it was my birthday or anything, but like she came over during all night and she like steps down of like inside the Beehive pit that she has on the side of the stage. And she like reaches for my hand and she's like, happy birthday. And just literally singing, looking in my eyes. And I'm like, so that's definitely one of the most memorable. That's always been a dream of mine to see her on my birthday.
up and rub up and fill up. Ease up and rub up and fill up on you. Gave you some time to prove that I can trust you. Again, I'm gonna ease up and rub up and fill up. Ease up and rub up and fill up on you.
I've seen footage of her recognizing you at concerts. Can you just tell me what that feels like, please?
Every time it happens, I'm just like, I still can't believe it. Like, this is someone that I have looked up to for however many years now. For her to spot me and it's just like her eyes and her face lights up. I'm like, she's actually happy I'm here. She actually realizes that I was here the day before yesterday. Like, she actually remember. So, I mean, it's such a good, being recognized by your favorite artist is just like indescribable. Like, every time she does it, I freeze. I can't even explain it, how I feel.
Here's what I want to know. I don't know you in any other context than Beyonce. So like, you and I don't have, we don't go way back. I don't have any personal stories, me and you. So I don't know you in any other context.
Mm-hmm.
But when I picture you being seen, literally seen by someone who is on a pedestal,
right,
for a lot of reasons, my first thought is Maverick must feel so much better about himself. Not to say you don't already,
mm-hmm,
not to say you need Beyonce to feel better about yourself,
right,
but is that right? Does that experience, not just once, not just twice, but repeatedly,
yes,
does that experience of her seeing you make you feel like a, I don't know, fill in the blank?
Yes, it definitely does. To not just feel like you're just another person in the crowd. It's just like, it feels like it's all worth it. It feels like, wow, she's happy to see me. Literally, I'm already, you know, happy with myself and everything. But her acknowledging you and complimenting you and saying, I love your outfit, I love you. It's just like, okay, yeah, I finally made it.
Does she in some ways feel celestial, godlike?
I mean, in the moment, yeah. But then I also like draw the line sometimes between like worship and, you know, also just like, she's my favorite artist. Like, you know, because I feel like that's like kind of where I draw the line. I'm not going to worship. But yeah, she definitely does feel like, wow. Like in the moment, you're like, this is a queen. This is the one who's done 2+ Super Bowl halftime shows, all the hundreds of millions of fans, and all of the how hard she's worked over 27-year-old career. Like, all of this, like, here she is in the flesh, like, in front of me.
What's the most you've ever paid for a ticket?
It would be Mrs. Carter show. It was my first time doing VIP, and it was $1,018.
What do you get for VIP?
So that one, I really love that VIP package. You show up like an hour or two before the show. It's like a whole backstage party with all the other fans, free drinks, free entrees, and, you know, everybody's, you know, taking their photo ops and all of that cool stuff. Then you get this VIP box sent to your house, which had like this cute canvas bag, a perfume that was out during that time, gift cards to her website, an autograph picture. And then on top of that, you get a ticket inside the stage and get to hold her hand and stuff.
Of all the merch that you've collected over the years, which piece of merch would you save from your house if it were burning down?
Oh, that's really hard. But last year, on the tour, I was in Louisville, Kentucky. And after she finished performing the song Heated, and, you know, it's all talking about cooling it down and heated and fanning herself off. Performs with this fan, and as she's leaving the main stage, she like kisses the fan and she throws it at me, and I catch it
like a bouquet at the end of a wedding,
literally. So I catch it, and I'm like, and she stood there and made sure I was the one who caught it. And that to me is just like, you can't even buy that anywhere. Like,
if you could say one thing to her, what would you say?
That's such a hard question. I've always thought about it, but I don't really know. Like, it's like, what else do you say? There's so much to probably squeeze into all of 15 seconds. I'm also shy, so I probably would freeze. Literally, I probably would just say, I love you. Just keep up with everything you're doing. Keep up the good work. Like, you're always going to have my support.
I have this idea that whatever we are fans of, be it products we buy, people we love, things like that, whatever we're fans of, we love it so much because we see ourselves in it. And so that being said, I wonder, when you absorb Beyoncé, when you listen to her, when you watch her, when you scream for her, when you shut up for her, when you adore her, what is it about you that you think you're adoring too?
As big as she is, she still has a lot of things to overcome. Even like she just said, when she entered the country genre, she didn't feel accepted. That made her want to go into it even more. And, you know, and that's how I feel every day. When you have a lot of naysayers and, you know, people who turn you down and all of that, it just makes you want to go harder, makes you want to fight harder, because she didn't get to where she is for, you know, doing nothing. You know, so it makes me want to work harder and, you know, grind till I own it, like she says.
There are people listening to this show and they don't get it. They don't see the appeal. They don't even know why we're doing the show. How do you respond to that?
Why do you camp out to watch Marvel movies? You spend thousands of dollars to watch people play sports. What's the difference? You know, it's the same people that will, you know, go crazy and riot over their favorite football team losing. But, you know, it's weird for, you know, someone to love an artist. Everybody has what they, you know, like and what they just like. You know, I don't judge anybody, but, you know, everybody has what is made for them.
And being in this world brings you closer to other people who love Beyoncé. I'd love to hear, I know this is a question you could probably answer for about 3 hours, but what it means to you to connect with other people who see what you see.
I love the Beehive. I love the community. It's kind of like a family. I came into this fan base. I made a little fan page back in 2014. It grew super, super quick. I was at like 160,000 followers. It's like a family. You feel welcome. You feel accepted. Everybody's able to just share the same love that they have for the same person. I love it, you know, being able to travel to different countries and people know who I am, and we're able to watch her on stage together and create all of these beautiful memories and stuff. I just love it.
I bet there's a lot of people who feel like they are Beyoncé super fans, but they've only been to like 3 concerts. And so is there like a sense of competition between super fans that you ever feel?
One thing with me is that I always wanted to feel welcoming. That's not my main thing. I feel like it's the worst to walk into a room or something and just not feel welcome. So as big as I am or as known as I am, I will see that fan that's just like, you know, if we're outside of the stadium and they're just like looking around or whatever, I'm like, hey, how are you? You know, like, you know, is this your first show? Same way how I felt when I went to my first show when I was 16, 17. I want to feel like that to the next person. I never wanted to be the mean girl, you can't sit with us type. I do not like that. And I feel like there's different things that make you a super fan, like, because the same way how I'll do 14 shows in 1 year, there's somebody that will buy everything she puts on her website. You know, there's someone that will do other things like that or know all the lyrics to every single song and who's the producer and who's this. You know, there's people are fans for different reasons. The same way how I may know the choreography to everything, someone may know something else. So I never like judge. I never, you know, like I said, the mean girl, you can't sit with us. I always wanted to be welcoming. There's probably some others that are in competition. Like, oh, well, I did this many shows. It's like, okay, cool, you know. But that's just not me.
There are many ways to love.
Yeah, many.
That was Maverick Flood, one of the biggest Beyoncé fans on planet Earth. And you're hearing, at his request, I'm That Girl, from the 2022 album Renaissance. We'll hear more from Maverick after the break. I'm Kyone Wolf. This is Audacious. Stay tuned. This is Audacious. I'm Kyone Wolf, and that is Riverdance from Beyoncé's new album, Cowboy Carter, which I've had in my head since the album came out at the end of March. For this episode about music superfans, we're talking with Maverick Flood, one of the biggest Beyoncé fans of all time. Now, Beyoncé is, not that you need me to tell you, one of the best-selling music artists of all time, winning 32 Grammy Awards, 12 American Music Awards, 16 Billboard Music Awards, and 29 MTV Video Music Awards, breaking records as the most awarded artist in MTV and Grammy history. Oh, and let's not forget 20 Guinness World Records. Like with Taylor Swift, we could go on and on, so let's just get back to my conversation with Beyoncé superfan, Maverick Flood. What would you say is a surprising fact about Beyoncé? Maybe something people don't know.
I didn't believe it until I actually witnessed it. When people say that she's like more beautiful and like has a bigger wow factor in person than actual TV, I didn't believe that. When you see her in person, you're like, wow. Normally it's the other way around. It's like TV makes you look better or whatever. No, it's actually the total opposite with her. Like the cameras don't do enough.
When you see her in concert and you've got your seat, you've gone to the bathroom, you're vibrating, you're ready to go, and then the lights go out. Can you talk about what that feels like for you?
For me, I would say it depends, because when I'm touring and stuff like that, the main thing I love to do is opening night. The opening night of a tour is just like, you can't even describe it, just not knowing anything. You're seeing the stage for the first time. You don't know what any of the visuals look like. You don't know the set list. You don't know where she's going to start the show or anything. Just for the first time, when the lights go out and you see the visuals and you're like, whoa. And especially when you know that, like, you know, for instance, like OTR2, there was like pictures of her spotted in Jamaica shooting visuals. But then for it to actually be playing in front of you for the first time, it's kind of like a movie, literally. Like, you know it's being done, but you haven't seen the result yet. And then just seeing it, and then, damn, she comes out. Amazing.
Would you say it feels like a spiritual experience?
Yeah, definitely. It's just like, you can't believe it's happening until it's over.
After a tour is over and you know that it's going to be a while until you can have this experience again, tell me about what that's like.
As the fans call it, we call it dehydration. So basically, we get dehydrated, you know, because now it's like, oh, I haven't seen her, especially like the pandemic, you know, not seeing or doing anything for 4 or 5 years, you know. From her last tour being in 2018 and not touring until 2023, definitely were dehydrated, you know. I just seen her in November or December. I feel like now I'm pretty good. I can, like, chill or whatever. But I wouldn't say come the end of the summer, the rehydration is going to kick in and, you know, like, okay, I'm going to start doing something now.
So I want to talk about her wardrobe. It is legendary. If you could raid her closet and snag one outfit, what would it be?
One of my favorite gowns from her was 2013, the Met Gala, when she used to go to the Met Galas. 2013, she wore like this fire flame type outfit. It was like Givenchy. And she had like the gloves that matched it. She had this long, you know, train that was like all flames and stuff. That was like one of my favorite looks from her that I feel like would just be iconic to have.
What prop from any of her videos or shows or anything at all, what prop would you like to snag?
In 2012, she had like a hat that was all crystal. And it looked like a sailor's cap, like, but it was so, everything was just like iced out crystal. I feel like that would be like iconic to have.
If you could give Beyonce a piece of advice, what in the world do you think you could tell Beyonce to help her?
She's super shy and super private, which is a good thing. But also I feel like, from a fan, I feel like we would like to be a little closer. And I feel like the more a fan feels connected, the more they want to buy, you know, the more they want to, you know, see and do. I feel like maybe just a little more like appearances or, you know, she only goes to the Grammys. Maybe you want to occasionally pop back up at a VMA or, you know, something, you know, the more we see you, the more it feels a little more realistic, I feel like. But yeah, that's only advice. Everything else is just obviously is perfect. She knows what she's doing.
This is not everything about you, right? Like, you are one of the biggest Beyonce fans and you're so much more. But when you die, your New York Times obituary may only really focus on that. So, in addition to your love of Beyonce, how else would you like to be remembered?
The guy who helped me out. The feeling I get from seeing happiness on someone's face that I created is like the same feeling I get when Beyonce looks at me. Like, you know, that moment is just like the best feeling ever, knowing that I have a purpose and my purpose is helping others. I love that feeling.
Maverick Flood, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
There's a tornado in my city. In the basement. Everything pretty. Rugged whiskey.
All right, so I've got a little bit of an update for you. 2 months after Maverick and I talked, Beyonce came out with her new album, Cowboy Carter. And remember how I said I don't really listen to music anymore? Well, I take it back. Let's go.
Then spin me in the middle, boy. I can't read your mind. This ain't Texas. Ain't no hold'em. Lay your cards down, 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 down. So pop your Lexus. Throw your keys out.
Audacious is always lovingly produced by Jessica Severin DiMartinez, Khalil Rahman, Meg Fitzgerald, Meg Dalton, and Katie Talarski at Connecticut Public Radio in Hartford. For another episode about one of the most powerful women in music, check out the one we did with singer-songwriter Jada Starr. She talks about living in the bright lights of her aunt Dolly Parton. Or for something completely different, listen to the one we did about the subject of so many songwriters. I spoke with two clinically diagnosed psychopaths who clarify what we get wrong about them. You can find them at ctpublic.org/audacious or wherever you get your podcasts. Stay in touch with me on the socials at Kyone Wolf. And you can always send me an email to audacious@ctpublic.org. Thanks for listening. Now, can we get back to Beyonce, please? This ain't Texas. Ain't no holding. Lay your cards down, 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 down. Parking lots. Throw your keys up. Stick around, round, 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 round. And I'll be damned if I cannot dance with you. Come pour some sugar, homie, honey, too. It's a real live boogie and a real live hold down. Don't be a I'll be damned if I cannot dance with you. Come pour some liquor on me, honey, too. It's a real live boogie and a real live hold down. Don't be a, come take it to the floor now, ooh.